Welcome to the HCI family of podcasts. We're your source for personal, professional, and organizational growth and development. We share our own original research, explore industry trends, and interview executives and thought leaders from across the globe. Join us for practitioner-oriented content around all things leadership, HR, talent management, organizational development, and change management. Maximize your personal and organizational potential with the HCI family of podcasts. Kelly Mack, and welcome to the conversation today.
Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
It's a pleasure to be with you. You're joining us from the San Diego area. I'm south of Salt Lake City in Utah. And today we're going to be talking about your new book, Work Life Well Lived, The Motives Met Pathway to No BS Well-Being at Work. I love that. I love the title. And this book is set to be released tomorrow. Today is April 1st, and I'm super excited to be able to share this with my audience, and I would invite everyone to check this out. As we get started, I wanted to share Kelly's bio with everybody. Kelly Mackin is the author of Work Life Well Lived, as I mentioned, and co-founder and CEO of the Motives Met platform and Human Needs Assessment, which empowers people to create their best work life and workplace. Kelly's journey from ill-being to well-being at work ignited her passion and dedication for helping people create health and happiness in their lives through a unique blend of skills. And I could go on, but I'm going to pause there, Kelly. Anything else that you would specifically like to highlight from your background, personal context, or regarding your company before we dive on into the broader conversation around your book?
No, I think that was a fantastic intro. We can leave it at that.
Wonderful. Well, I always like to start when talking about a book, kind of with the foundation of the kind of how, why and how, like why this book, why now, and how did you come about to write this book at this time?
Well, this book has been a long journey that really started back to when I was a kid. And I grew up watching my mom experience such extremes in her work life. She was senior VP of one of the largest global ad agencies, one of like the first women VPs. And to me, she was just the epitome of success. And she loved the work that she did. I mean, it gave her such confidence and joy and really lit her up. But then her company got bought out and everything changed. And I just saw her as a kid go through such stress and work trauma and be in such a toxic environment to where she would get physically sick before work. But unfortunately, so many of us kind of hold the belief that that's just the way it is. And I'm so happy to say that that's changing more and more every day. But then I ended up on that same path, like my mom. And I call the work environment I was in like Mad Men for modern times. I mean, it was wild. I look back now and think about the environment I was in. And when you're outside of it, of course, it's a lot easier to have the clarity. But at the time, I just felt like this was something I had to put up with, and that one day, maybe with enough blood, sweat, and tears, I could earn health and happiness at work. That, you know, it was a privilege and not a right. So I had a big wake-up call once I hit some real lows. And that really propelled me on a whole journey towards well-being in my life, both personally and professionally. And then it was around 2017 where my mom and I were actually thrilled. We're like, hey, they're using the words work and well-being in the same sentence. This is wild. You know, this wasn't the case not that long ago. But we went, why is stuff still so bad then? Like, why is ill-being at work still skyrocketing? And this was even before the pandemic. And, you know, part of our background is in quantitative human behavior research. So just out of our research curiosity, we started to research what even is work well-being. And that's really what ignited the whole path to get to where we are today and to write this book.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you for that background and sharing a little bit about your story and why this is so personal to you. I think that always makes books like this more compelling. And you just mentioned the research that you've been involved in, and maybe we can now dig into that a little bit more. Tell us more about that research around well-being and kind of what your focus has been up to this point.
There's so much I could share here, so I'm going to try to be concise. But essentially, I discovered that there are 10 dream killers, as we call them, that threaten the dream of a work life well lived for everybody. And I talk about these in the book. But a few of these dream killers really are specific to the fact that the world doesn't know what work well-being is, and that how we have traditionally been taught how to approach health and happiness at work is actually wrong. So there's a few main obstacles. One is, when talking about work well-being, we can lack specificity. You know, if you search on the internet or go to company websites, you'll find stuff like, oh, well-being at work is when employees are healthy, happy, satisfied in their work environment. And that sounds great, but what the heck does that really mean? You know, like, what do we really do with that? You know, I use the term health and happiness all the time, but it doesn't serve us as a definition around being well at work, because it leaves it then this fluffy, vague, intangible thing. The second thing we found is that even when we got more specific, it was often still inaccurate or suboptimal. So for example, when I tell people I have a company that helps create well-being at work, I'll get responses like, oh, so you help people have work-life balance. And that is a huge misconception, because, for example, I actually don't need strong work-life balance to have my best work life. And I can share more about that, because that usually perks people's ears up. Or in our research, when we asked people, we got responses like, well, well-being at work is being able to get my job done without costing me my sanity. Or it's when my team feels valued and likes what they do. And sure, would, you know, having more sanity and less stress and liking what you do be a positive thing? Sure. But is that really like the best way for us to think about thriving at work? Well, we found maybe not so much. Third obstacle is that important aspects of well-being at work go missing. Things like having fun, being challenged, being able to speak freely. These things are just missing from the well-being conversation, but we found that for some people, they are absolutely vital to their health and happiness at work. And then
can I pause you there just for a second? Because I mean, so much of what you've already said really resonates with me. But from that last point, you know, I'm just thinking about myself. And I think part of what you're getting at is, like, everyone is unique. We're not a monolith. Everyone has unique motives, drivers. What's going to, you know, the work life well-lived is going to be different for me than you and other, you know, anyone else. For me, it's a lot of what you just said. You know, like, my main gig is I'm a professor. I'm a professor at a university. I love it. I have a lot of autonomy. I have a lot of schedule flexibility. I have, like, a lot of those types of things that a lot of people would say, oh, that's amazing. And it is. Like, I'm not going to, you know, say it's not, but that's wonderful. But I'll tell you, some of the things that either get me the most frustrated, discouraged, even angry at work isn't around those elements. It's around, like, how much psychological safety is there in the workplace? How much am I allowed to speak my mind and share ideas? And how are those ideas received? Like, it's those things that tend to matter more to me than some of those other things that I know might matter more to other people. And so anyways, I just wanted to highlight that. Like, it's that really resonated me when you said that. And I think we all probably can tune into different things that are most important to us and most salient.
Yes. No, I mean, that you got it. You hit the nail on the head. And it's so simple and obvious in a way, but it's just not how we approach things. Because the last obstacle I was going to touch on is that there's so much noise out there to navigate through. You know, there's CEOs and TED Talks telling you got to find your purpose. Otherwise, you're going to be miserable your whole work life. You know, there's research saying your employees are leaving because they don't have growth. And other research is like, no, they're leaving because, like, of a bad boss, or they don't think you value them enough. So it's like, there's just so many people telling us what we should want and what we should need and what we should prioritize in our hierarchy of needs, when all of that we found is pretty much BS. Because what matters most to me at work is not going to be what matters most to you. Well-being is personal. We call it the ugly truth because it makes it a lot tougher. A lot of people want to say, hey, these are the five things you need to care about. Here are the five things your team wants most. And we say that's all a lie. So our research actually found there's 28 psychological, emotional, and social needs, what we call motives, that are what thriving at work is truly all about. And we developed this really cool framework. It's colored and it's interactive on our website. And so it makes it easy to grasp. But these 28 needs fall into 10 overarching buckets, or motive domains, as we call them. So for example, in the freedom domain, there's the need for autonomy, the need for flexibility. And like you were saying, free expression is a big one, that need to express yourself and have that psychological safety. In the balance domain, we have the work-life harmony and balance pace motive. But belonging is a motive, and fun and self-esteem and prestige and culture and leadership. So there's so many of these different needs, but we need a way to organize, prioritize, and understand them in a way that actually serves us. You know, like the type A person in me was dying for some structure. I'm like, okay, sure, there's some good information and research in the world, but how do we really make sense of it and develop a system around it that helps us? And, you know, given our research found that well-being is personal and that we have different well-being drivers, that's what led us to develop our human needs assessment so that people could really get clarity and have this spotlight on the needs that matter most to them. So when you take our assessment, you uncover your top five motives that are the biggest influencers on your well-being at work today.
And I'm wondering, you know, as you're describing that, I'm thinking there's lots of different typologies out there. You know, we've all done personality assessments or strength finders or like these various things, right? And I think they're all super useful because they can really catalyze self-reflection and help you better understand yourself. And one of the challenges is sometimes that people become overly dogmatic around them. And then all of a sudden, instead of it just being a self-reflective tool, now I'm using it as something where I'm saying, you know, I'm kind of like judging people around me or like trying to like put people into a box. And sometimes it's with good intention. Sometimes it's like, I want to have a well-rounded team, right? And so I want everyone to do this assessment. So now that I can know where everyone else falls so we can have, you know, complement each other and have a well-rounded team. And I think that's admirable, but also it can become problematic if you become overly dogmatic around these types of assessments. So I'm wondering, as you were describing yours, I'm wondering like how you view that and like how it can be utilized in such a way that it can, you know, fulfill the purpose of it and inform how we lead and inform our teams and whatnot, but without falling into the trap, you know, that sometimes some of these types of typologies and how they're utilized does.
That's a fantastic question. I haven't gotten that one before. I love that question. It's part of what we help people do with the assessment, with our framework in research, is to really develop what we call the motives mindset. It's the thoughts and beliefs and attitudes that we have around approaching these human needs at work that is going to ultimately allow us to have the careers, to have the workplaces and cultures that we want. And a big part of that mindset is embracing motive diversity, embracing need diversity at work, that we're all going to need different things at different times. And that if we want to have greater connection, a lot of times it's really about just limiting judgment. Instead of asking ourselves, how do we connect? It can be asking like, how do we limit judgment? Because we don't realize often, it can be subconscious, but we tend to think that others feel how we feel, that others need what we need, when in fact they don't. And I own this about myself wholeheartedly. I can look back on my career and think, oh, I thought this was important and this is what I should need. So this is what you should need. And our team needs to think about things this way. Otherwise, we're not going to be a high performing team like you were saying. So it's really developing this mindset to say that the diversity of needs coming together is actually what well-being at work is all about. And unlike other assessments that kind of want to put a stake in the ground and say, this is your personality or these are your strengths, you know, personal strengths, for example, is one of the 28 motives, just one of them. So we say someone could be very driven by strengths. Someone else might be really driven by innovation and wanting or challenge and not be driven by their strengths at this moment in their work life. But it's not, your needs are not static. They are going to change throughout your work life. You know, as you hit big milestones at work, if big things happen in your personal life, that is going to change your needs. I mean, I'm sure, John, what you needed most 20 years ago in your career is going to be different than what drives your well-being today. So it doesn't really work to say, oh, let's try to get this mix of five people on my team to have these perfect complementary needs, because these needs are going to naturally evolve. What it's about and what we drive home with leaders all the time is that it's learning to live in the friction of these needs well, because inevitably certain needs hold more friction with one another, and it's unavoidable. So instead, if you can develop that, you know, motive diversity mindset and go, okay, how do we compromise and problem solve and be strategic and learn to live in this tension in a way that we're doing it collectively and everyone understands that there does need to be compromise at times, that is what's going to actually set us up for success rather than trying to control people's needs and put together a team with perfect needs that complement one another.
Yeah. And like you said, the reality is, even if you are able to kind of hone in exactly at where someone's at point A, that doesn't mean that's where they're going to be at in point B or C, right? Like, we all have life changes. You know, we have life stage, we have a career stage, we have different personal things that happen in our lives, you know, whatever, like there's a thousand things. And so there's really no substitute for just, like, as a leader, trying to know your people, having regular dialogue and conversations around what is their driving motivation, their driving purpose at this point in time, what they need from us to be successful. And just because we had that conversation with them last year doesn't mean it's the same thing as what's going on this year or even a couple months ago, right? So we just have to have those, that kind of ongoing dialogue. And these types of tools and assessments can be really, really useful to facilitate that dialogue and to facilitate the self-reflection that's necessary for people to even be aware of what their motives are. Because so often, at least I found this with myself and with those around me, that we tend to default to, like, whatever society is telling us is most important. And so I may not even be aware of, like, what my driving motives are, even though it's me. Like, it's me and I'm living my life, and yet I'm clueless because I'm just kind of living the life that I've been told to lead and that people say is important, or, like, the aspects that, you know, define a successful career, I'm just kind of accepting what other people tell me instead of defining it for myself, right? And so that can make it really challenging.
Super challenging. There's this great quote by the psychologist Seth Gillian that says, knowing our needs doesn't guarantee that they'll be met, but it does raise the odds in our favor. And then we can do the important work of honoring our needs. Because that's 100% what we found through our research, is that people just aren't always aware. And we're all busy. We're just trying to get through the day. We're not mindful of these motives at work. Mm-hmm. And we all have blind spots. I mean, I had to laugh. I helped build the algorithm and the assessment. And I had a good guess of what two of my five motives would be. But I didn't know what my other three top motives would be. And one was a complete surprise and kind of felt like a slap in the face, which was the security motive. Because I'm like, anybody who knows me knows I'm an entrepreneur. I'm a risk taker. I'm an adventurous soul. And when I saw security as a top motive, I was like, what? That felt so out of character. But I realized it was showing up in my top five because it was weak. It was my weakest moment at the time. It was the need that was not met that really needed my attention, because I was leaving the comforts of my career behind to start Motives Met and go on this scary journey. So there was fear and doubt, and that was kind of holding me back. I had one foot in, one foot out. And so I had to really have, like, this, we call, like, carefrontation with yourself and go, okay, how am I going to better meet this motive? What am I going to do? And that's one of the, you know, beautiful parts of assessments like this. It helps to really facilitate that self-reflection. It helps you to go, okay, how am I going to develop an action plan and really start to strategize so that you're empowered to make changes in your work life for the better?
Yeah, I love that. Well said. Okay, so let's talk now just a little bit about, like, from your book, or just more generally around your business and the work that you do. What advice would you give to leaders who want to amplify mental health and happiness and create a people-first culture within their organization, recognizing that we have all these different people with all these different drivers and motives and things that, you know, they bring to the table? That's not an easy thing to accomplish. And, you know, would you have any suggestions around, like, maybe two or three specific things that people can start to try to do to move the needle?
Well, I think a big one, just in terms of, like, people first, is really, again, embracing this mindset that people first equals needs first. And, you know, our research shows need satisfaction is what equals job satisfaction. So it's the numbers are startling. When people have their motives met at work, not only are they more likely to stay now, but they are so much more likely to stay for the long haul. So, you know, people talk about people first, and it gets kind of thrown around as this buzzword, but it gets void of that clarity of what does that mean? So it's you as a leader taking a step back, looking at these 28 needs and going, which ones are thriving? Which ones are suffering? Why is that? And which ones are most important to the people on my team? So that's a really critical part. Second thing I would say that has been so monumental with some teams we have worked with is empowering as a leader everyone to co-create well-being at work together. because it's tough for leaders. They get it hammered in their heads. You need to take the lead on creating well-being and mental health and happiness for your team and a great culture and all these things. And yes, you have a huge responsibility as a leader, but a big part of that responsibility is actually sharing that accountability and responsibility. Because at the end of the day, the degree that any of these needs are going to be met at work is going to be dependent on everybody. So we say that well-being at work happens when individuals and work peers and leaders show up for one another and each other in meaningful ways to keep these needs healthy. So you need to tell everybody, hey guys, there's 28 needs. This is tough. There's going to be friction. Everyone's got to show up and care about these things. And what's really cool about that, what happens is people start to have compassion for you. Your team starts to see, oh yeah, this is kind of tough. This isn't going to be perfect. There's give and take. This is a tough thing in our culture to figure out. So that's been a really huge thing that can help you move the needle. I would say motive diversity, we touched on it, but reflect as a leader. Which of these motives are you judging that maybe your team has? Where do you maybe have biases yourself because something is more important to you, or you're just not thinking about something because it's less important to you? So that's really critical. And the last quick thing I will mention is that you need to take a personalized approach, not a one size fits none approach that just doesn't work. Each person on your team is different. You know, I had a leader tell me, oh, I work really, really well with my teams on their goals and their growth. Every quarter we sit down and we talk about it. And I said, that's great. That's fantastic. But growth is one of the 28 needs. So what about the other 27? Are you having conversations about those? Do you know who's in a growth spurt period and who isn't? So those would be probably the big four I would recommend.
Yeah, the individualized nature of it is just so important. And like you said, as a leader, despite whatever our best intentions may be, it can be so, so easy to just have our blind spots and have our own biases impact, you know, how we're being with the people around us. Just because something's important to me doesn't mean this is important. As important to somebody else, or vice versa, right? Like we just have, and one of the pet things that I am always concerned about that frustrates me more than anything else, that may not even register for other people. And so that's a hard thing to admit and to swallow, and then to do the hard work of just like knowing your people and having the dialogue on a regular basis so that you can better understand those things and then be willing to address them, to work with your team collectively, like you said multiple times, so that we all have ownership in this. We can all do this together. That is super key. It's not rocket science, but it's hard because we have to be consistent. We have to be committed to doing this. And it means, you know, one size doesn't fit all, despite what we always try to do, you know, like humans in our brains, like we try to put people into buckets and we try to categorize things. And it's so easy when we can say, here's a 5-step, you know, checklist of like how we can make everyone happy at work. That's what we want. That the problem is that doesn't work. And so we have to be able to acknowledge that. And then we have to be able to just personalize it. And there's no substitute for that intentionality and specificity.
Yeah, absolutely. You have to walk the path. As we say, you know, in the book, I give you the no BS path. It's to understand, be mindful of, evaluate, communicate, and then ultimately meet these motives, developing an action plan, sharing your motive stories around them. So if you walk the path, you're going to get there. But, you know, we always say we're not going to sell you on some kind of false narrative of just go do these few things. And that's what you need to do, because we know from our research, it just doesn't work.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I think there's a lot of organizations who can't admit that, you know, like I think that's important. And sometimes when, you know, because people like the quick fix, they like the digestible, and they want the easy answer. You know, sometimes it can be really attractive to us in our businesses to just try to sell them that snake oil, and that's not actually going to do anything. It's not going to help them. It might make us money, but it's not going to help them to find success in life. So I appreciate your approach there. Kelly, this has just been a pleasure. I know at the time I need to let you go here in just a minute. Before we wrap things up for today, I just wanted to give you a chance to share with the audience how they can connect with you, find out more about your work, your team, and where they can find your book, and then give us a final word on the topic for today.
So you can check us out at motivesmet.com. You'll be able to see the framework there. You'll be able to check out the human needs assessment. But what's really cool is if you buy the book, you get a free code to take the assessment, which is a $20 value, which is awesome. So then when you go through the book, you're really doing it through the lens of your top five motives, which is super cool. And you can get the book anywhere books are sold. And I'm very active on LinkedIn. You can find me, Kelly Mackin. And I'm also on Instagram, Kelly Mackin _ motives met. And I think the final word to leave you with is that what I've heard time and time again, that's really awesome about engaging with us in this pathway to well-being, is that people feel empowered in a new way they've never felt before, because this is a totally new approach to well-being at work. And you feel like you have the real clear steps to get you towards that attainable dream of a work life well-lived.
Yeah. Thank you, Kelly. It's been a real pleasure. I encourage the audience to reach out, get connected, find out more about what Kelly can do for you. Check out the book. And as always, I hope everyone can stay healthy and safe, that you can find meaning and purpose at work each and every day. And I hope you all have a great week. Thanks for joining us for this episode of the podcast. We hope you stay healthy and safe, and please join us again soon.